Blog Talk Radio.
Nothing but you. Good Saturday afternoon, everyone. This is Jessica Baptiste, aka the Archer Writer. Today I'm doing a show. I've been actually wanting to do this podcast for a long time. It's a podcast about a situation that unfortunately I happened in my early teen years. It's the murder of my good friend, Brandon Vinson. I went to school with his sister, Megan. We actually lived close to each other, and Brandon was 15 years old and was brutally murdered the summer of 1995. And anyone that is from Lexington, South Carolina, where I grew up, remembers this case. And it, after 25 years, is unfortunately still unsolved. And it shaped a lot around my teen years. So I'm going to bring on his sister, Megan Vinson. She is going to be joining me. You there, Megan?
I'm here. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yeah, good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. It's trying to get ready to do this podcast. It's different than my normal podcast because it's taking a walk down memory lane that I know for you go through every day. Being that this happened so close to you, this is your brother, but it's just unearthing things that I didn't realize were right there, and having to think about stuff that isn't too good, but at the same time, trying to come up with some type of healing process in all of this. So I'm going to hand it over to you. Just tell the listening audience about your brother, Brandon, and what happened.
Well, I definitely will. Yeah, it's definitely a healing process that, you know, go through. And I don't really know if there's healing or just that the time that passes that you just kind of learn to adapt and adjust. So
yeah.
June 10th of 1995, my brother, Brandon Vinson, was working at Winn-Dixie, number 6. It was a super busy, it was the busiest grocery store in Lexington. Cause that's
the
kind of
only one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was like the only one.
Yeah. So super small. I mean, like over there where we were, and it, like on Saturdays that was packed, and he worked at his back. He was a bag boy there. And so he had started work that morning. I may not be correct about some of the timing and stuff like that, just cause it's been
That's
to me,
fine.
I was
That's
12.
Fine.
So put
yeah.
it as I was,
yeah.
you know, I was 12 years old. So I think it was working 8 to 6 that day or, 9 to something like that. So,
yeah.
I do remember. So the way it went down was apparently the tracking of him was I think it was around 2:37. He checked out at
mm-hmm.
he had got from the deli, went to
mm-hmm.
Check out at the counter. He bought 2 Cokes and a meal or whatnot. And apparently from what was been told is that he went and sat in the back, which is not normal for Brandon because Brandon would always
mm-hmm.
go to Subway. And he ordered
yeah.
a certain kind of sandwich every time, and that was his normal. So for him to eat at the deli is really different and just kind of just not, you know, one of the things that he
yeah.
usually typically did. So that was around 2:37, and apparently he did clock back in per se. But
mm-hmm.
after, I think the last time he was seen was around like 4:30
mm-hmm.
that day. So there, mm-hmm. there was a big side. There were some managers there. There were, you know, that knew Brandon. And, you know, you go missing. You're a bag boy on a huge, you know, big
yeah.
Saturday. Everything's gone. And, you know, someone's missing. No contact made to the family. Nothing was said. The
wow.
only way I knew is my grandfather went to pick him up because daddy was working second shift at Michelin.
Mm-hmm.
And that was
mm-hmm.
30 to 11. And mama was
mm-hmm.
at the baseball field with her husband, Buzz.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at our home, because daddy had picked me up that morning, and I was waiting on Brandon to get home because Poppy had went to pick him up, and he had my 2 cousins with him, and he comes to the door with a short sleeve shirt because Mimi had bought him one probably from Hamrick's.
Yeah.
But Mimi had bought him a short sleeve shirt because it started to get hot, and Brandon was still wearing the long sleeve white,
yeah,
you know,
Winn-Dixie uniform.
Shirt. Yeah, it was a red vest and white long sleeve shirt and black pants, and Brandon has black Nikes on, and that's what his attire was. And he had a bag that said Brandon. Somewhere in between that time, my brother disappeared. Of course, no one did. Poppy came to the house, and it was after 6, and it was probably closer to 6:30, I'm assuming. And, you know, he came to the door, whatever, and he said, he was bringing me the shirt, and he was like, Brandon's not at work. I said, Poppy, Brandon's at work. You need to go back. Like, you know,
yeah.
You might have forgot. You know, typical, you know, thinking, all right, Pop, like, he's there.
Yeah.
Like, you just probably missed it. And he's like, Megan, he's not there. I called Daddy immediately at work, said, Brandon's missing. You know, he's not at work. Something's wrong. And I contacted Lexington County. I think he met the police officer up there between like 7:30, somewhere in that time range. And they did a report. They did not go in the store. They did not look around. They did not. They've considered him a runaway.
Which is beyond belief, because Brandon would never run away.
Oh, absolutely not. You know, he was an honorable student, you know, typical teenager that, you know, there was nothing that I would think, and being around him, and I was definitely the one that was around him. And I'd be the one that would be like, oh, I'm going to so-and-so's house and not be there, you know, typical me. But that was Brandon, because he would get on me for anything. And, you know, Brandon was always either fishing or with his friends, and we knew exactly where he was. It was not typical for him to just leave with someone unless he knew them. The days were kind of cold. You know, we set up most, it started raining, I do believe, that night. So, yeah, we were waiting on him to come home. Nothing. The next day, you know, it's like, and as time went, and it's like, this is unreal. You know, this is not happening. You know, and I'm thinking, Brandon has to come home or something. There was not, because I actually left. I didn't want to be home. I didn't know how to feel. So I was actually at the neighbor's and stayed with her while it all happened, because I was like, something's not right. I don't know what you're, when you're a sibling, it's kind of like those things that you just feel completely.
Exactly.
Yeah. You have that feeling that something's not wrong. I mean, that something's wrong,
yeah.
You know, and something's not right. So, time went on. By Tuesday, it was Tuesday, June 13th. And, big black car pulls up with Sheriff Metz in it and Jackie Brothers, who was a victim's advocate at that time. And, I want to say that, I think Eddie Height was there also, and they came in my home and they took Mom and Daddy to the back, to the bedroom back there. And all I heard was my mom's knees like hit the floor and she's screaming. And I knew then that Brandon wasn't coming back. So apparently, this man who died recently, he was actually, and it affected him tremendously. He had, pulled over to the side of the road. He worked and he had pulled over to go use the restroom, and he had seen Brandon's shoe. Like he ran in the woods and saw his shoe. And then he realized there was a person there. Brandon he was found, in a chicken coop, near Old Wild Road, kind of going towards Batesburg, Leesville, which was probably at least 15, you know, 20 minutes from Winn-Dixie. And it's got to be somewhere that, you know, it's not a place that you would just kind of, no one would know, you know, unless you're familiar, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, it was in the back of there, the old chicken coop. And back in the day, I guess apparently it was like a peach stand. And it was also a party place per se, from what I've heard. Not really sure. So Brandon was found. He was stabbed 72 times at least. And that's where he was. And so they went out there. Finally, they interviewed a few people, talked to some people. They cleared my dad. They had my dad, I think, 3 or 4 times in there. They're focusing on
family. I remember that.
At first, like, and not like they're focusing on them so much. And, you know, trying to figure that out. So I literally was like away from everyone. Like I didn't want to be near anyone. I didn't know what was going on. That passed a little bit. And, you know, of course we went through all the motions of like the funeral and stuff like that. And we had nothing. Like there's several people who had called in. The knife was never recovered from there. DNA was ran apparently. Brandon still had the receipt in his wallet. He wasn't robbed. His pocket knife was still there, I believe. Nothing was taken from him that was, like, he wasn't, you know, robbed or anything like that.
Yeah.
I recently learned, see, the twine that was bound. I just recently saw the twine that was had his hands bonded and what it looked like. I knew he was, but his hands were bonded and stuff like that. I just didn't know the, you know, the details to it until recently. Apparently, he took, like, 4 points to the head, possibly. I'm not sure how that occurred, but they said that when you review the autopsy report and stuff like that, you basically go down
to
every piece. But when we met with Sled, they said, oh, Brandon was beat up so bad, da-da-da. And I ask, I say, because from my background and stuff, I was like, if he was beat up so bad, why is there not broken ribs? There's not contusions to the face, anything noted. So can you explain? And that was something they couldn't explain. And which they still, you can't, because they, I mean, the case was, it was one of those things that's like, okay, this happened to this kid, and if you're shot 72 times, that's not a crime. Like, I'm not going to.
That's rage.
It's not a passion crime.
That's rage.
Passion. It's, yeah. So, like, say you and I know each other, and so you and I decide to go rob a bank, and you know, you were going in with me just to cash a check, and you're like, oh my god, are you seriously robbing this bank, Megan? You know, I'm gonna shoot you 6 times to make sure you're dead, and I might shoot the killer once and walk, you know what I'm saying? I'm gonna make sure you suffer because you know me, and you know
exactly.
Like, I'm gonna make sure. So it's kind of like, so that's where you put in perspective that someone did this, had to know him. Then they in August of 95, they came up with the fact that this guy Kalen Radwell, who served 20 years in jail, they said that he killed my brother. No DNA has ever been linked to Kalen. So I'm not sure, just by his confessions, the things he said per se is what they said that was noted to the confession that they could pinpoint to him being involved in my brother's murder. Now, nothing that I've seen has even remotely made me think. At first, that's all I had. So, of course, at first, I'm thinking, okay, we have – but even to stab someone 72 times, you can't do that alone. And this is a guy that came from Arizona. You're barely here 2 weeks at most, I think. And you don't know that area. There's no way.
No.
You don't know. You don't have many friends. You have no car, no transportation. And also, you have an alibi that you're on the phone contacting Arizona to a collect call to your mom at the time frame that would be, you know, associated with Brandon's death.
Yeah.
There's nothing that, and, you know, I say this so very lightly, I guess, that I feel like, I mean, this guy, whether or not, you know, everybody's like, oh, well, he sat there for 20 years. He must be guilty. He must be this. Okay, I don't know the circumstances as to why he stood there and sat there, because Brandon's case is so twisted. He sat for 10 years, even with Kalen being in jail and extradited from Arizona. Kalen sat in jail for 10 years. They were going for the death penalty at that point. Donnie Myers was on the case. He was the solicitor at the time. And then by 2005, it was believed that he came up and said, hey, do this as a conflict of interest, saying that basically he had discovered evidence per se that had never been discovered before that was in back there in the back of Lexington.
What?
So that's why Donnie Myers decided that he was no longer going to be, because they took the death penalty thing off of the case, but there's not enough evidence against him anymore. And by 10 years at that point, everyone was like, I don't recall or I don't remember. So it was kind of like, you know,
I hate
we
that.
Don't have anything. Yeah. So we had nothing to really go by except for, you know, we have, you know, Lexington County that that, you know, they're doing the right thing and Sled and everybody involved. And, you know, there's just nothing that's concrete with this case. And so, 2005, we go to court, and Trey Gowdy had taken my brother's case over. He barely had, I don't even know how much time he had. He was giving Brandon a case and saying, here, you got to take it. We're going to court. It may have been 30 days. I may be wrong about that. It may have been more, but it was very limited what he had. So Trey, he was the seventh at, he was in Greenville at the time, and he came and took over my brother's case as a solicitor. And he did absolutely everything he could, I think, possible to support family at that time. He was just great, and, you know, just more information than I think we gathered along the whole road. So we sat in the courtroom, and that's the first time I had really ever been involved after the first initial part of it. Because it's such a distancing thing for me. So 10 years later, we're in the courtroom, and, you know, we have some people and stuff, and you know, that's the first time I'd ever seen Kaylin. But I wasn't like, I didn't have that feeling. I don't know. I just never really did. So it's kind of weird, but they kind of, that, you know, we had two choices that day. We could try the case, and the judge was so tired of hearing, you know, I don't recall and I don't remember, that, you know, he could have walked out of jail that day.
Oh my gosh.
And then he offered us the Alford plea, which the Alford plea basically says, I do not admit to committing this crime, but I feel like there may be enough evidence against me to, say. But that was based on, okay, because this kid, I mean, he's 17 years old, you know, he committed the crime. And so, you know, he's in jail for 10 years before this even goes. So you're saying, okay, you know, dude, you can sit in here for the rest of your life. Maybe possibly we can. You have the option of maybe getting out, possibly could happen, or you can make a plea. So we had a family meeting, and, you know, everyone's like, what do we do? You know, I let dad make that decision, and they chose the Alford plea, which Kaylin did get out of jail in August of 2015. So he's living, you know, life and stuff like that. I don't know anything necessarily about him or anything. I've heard mixed things about people who are in jail. Like that with them, which, you know, I mean, people talk, so that's kind of one of those things that I don't know. I don't really know, because I don't know everything that happened. But the more information we get, and the more we dug into everything, I started working with Brian Seatree. He's a private investigator, and he was also a Lexington County cop that worked my brother's case back in 2004. And I guess it just the case itself was one of his, like, he got involved in it. It was a passion for him. And then Brian and I had started, it was really weird. I kept running into him places and stuff like that. And, you know, him and his wife and stuff. And, you know, he said the one thing that was so intriguing is that I never talked about it. And I never, you know, was a victim. So I never ever said that. And he said that made it more of a passion for him to work for our family. So we started digging deep, spent lots of day. If you could put it into his age and years, he spent it on this case. And so he's figured things and put things together, and we've looked through stuff and thought about other people and kind of did things. And we've had meetings with SLED and stuff like that. And, they basically shut us down, you know, basically made us look like some of the things that we would come up with were ludicrous, but, they were all like, it's just stuff that can't be proven. So they did send back, and Brandon, they sent off some more DNA recently. This was over a year ago, I should say. So it came back, and no match Kaylin still. And the other person that was in question, that it did match them. So there was a deathbed confession back in, I believe, 2007.
Oh, my God.
I may be wrong. But they would not tell us who made that deathbed confession.
So a deathbed confession, did they confess to the murder or they confess to involvement?
They confessed to, I think it was their child that was involved, I believe, or someone related to them. So there's involvement that way. And there's been, since this, one of the managers at Winn-Dixie that was around tried to commit suicide multiple times. And finally, he actually posted a flower on my brother's. There's like the find the grave, and in July in 2012 he posted it up on my brother's wall, and then he killed himself within 20 something days. He attempted twice that day to commit suicide, and finally just ended his life.
Did he leave a note or anything to why he did it?
No one ever said anything. That there's nothing that, you know, was said, or because we tried to kind of figure that out, like, was there a note somewhere, was there something said, like, but it was something that really, like, even you know, his family and stuff said is something that he carried with him very, very heavily. So and the person actually for Brandon's case as the investigator at the time, because there was another investigator that was involved prior that was the first guy who met with my father, but then Eddie Height was the case, and he was actually a friend of the family. He knew my brother and I very well. So he would watch us where this rank between my brother and sister. He just took the case, and he was very much so shut my mom down several times, you know, basically telling her, you know, you don't know who you're messing with. You need to sit back and calm down. Yeah. So she was shut down and shut out multiple times because we kept trying to fight back and say, hey, you know, this is what's going on. This can't be right, and you can't just close the case. It's always been open, per se, but everything, they either don't follow up or they don't they didn't want to hear it anymore. And so the one that was on it recently who finally was taken off or either decided that he was going to be taken off, him and I had a conversation that was not very, very nice, and he said that he gave this stuff away. But mom and them still doubt him for a little while, and he's no longer on the case. We've just got a lot of people talking. I mean, when you listen to people and they're on Brandon's page, because, you know, we have Justice for Brandon's page, and we finished all of our tolerance and done, you know, many videos and his podcast and stuff like that, showing, you know, the parents and stuff like that, and contact, you know, with any information. So I think I started three of those. And reached out. We got a lot of, you know, we had people, you know, saying stuff and calling in. I've had a lot of information about people around, and stuff, but a lot, the thing that, you know, where it's kind of like still an unsure, you know, cold case, mm-hmm. is that so many people have died. So, and most of them are from suicide. So,
that's something heavy to live with for 25 years. And then if they know something and they don't want to come forward and they're carrying that, you're going to get the deathbed confession and you're going to get the suicide attempts and then the final attempt, which was successful, that took them out. So, you're going to get that.
You're going to get those things. And it's just like, you know, and I'm not even sure. I'm probably, you know, I think that, you know, they were probably at my brother's grave. I'm assuming that people involved were around. I don't know about Brandon's friends that would be involved in it necessarily, because I don't believe that. There's
not
so many
either.
Of them that, they were just not capable. I mean, if you think about it, who's capable of that? So, but if you go and if you're not leaving any trace of DNA, you know, not any trace, but you know what you're doing. Like, you know, you could have, you know, gloves on that, you know,
kids.
You're going to do that.
This is somebody that knew what they were doing, and this is somebody that had the intent on hurting Brandon, which I don't understand. And it brings up so much, because back then in 1995, anybody who's listening to this, if you've just moved to Lexington in the last 15 to 20 years, Lexington was nothing like it is now the way it was in 1995. There was nothing out there. Like, there was really nothing there like it is now. So we all knew each other, and Megan's neighborhood and my neighborhood neighbored each other. There was actually a big behind pond that separated our neighborhoods, and we would go walking in the woods back and forth to each other's houses, and we all grew up together and we all knew each other. So when one of us gets murdered, it's not like Brandon was hit by a car playing out in the road, or you guys packed up and moved away because your dad got a job somewhere else. This is someone who I sat down with and chilled out with and saw on a regular basis anytime I went to Winn-Dixie, that was murdered. And there's so many questions as to why, because it's never made sense to me. And I, even as a 30-something-year-old person sitting down trying to connect the dots, this whole thing has never made any damn sense.
No,
at all.
It never has, and it doesn't. And the thing is that, you know, it had to be premeditated. It had to know. And honestly, God, I think I do believe it was someone who knew my family. I honestly do. They would have to schedule my dad's schedule, my mom's schedule. They would have to be someone who knew something and how their time frame would max out. And
exactly.
I even think somebody who said, you know, hey, Brandon, you know, come ride with me for a minute or whatnot, you know, or come do this with me for a minute. You know, it was from that Winn-Dixie store, as well as it is in my deep, you know, it's in my that's never going to change for me. And they know, and I think there's a couple of them that are still alive. I've had many talks with, you know, some people who are involved at county who are big wigs, you know, like, you know, the good old boys back in the day. And they have sat with me and told me that that is the most mishandled case they've ever seen. And it was it's a shit show.
It is.
You got a kid that, you know, that's taken like that, and it shook the entire community. The entire
for years and years
community. I remember, and I remember having to go back to school, and you know, it was just I was looked at so horrible. It was such a horrible feeling.
I hate it because, and again, it just comes back. I was in Pennsylvania that summer at my mother's house. And I had saw Brandon before I left. Every time I would get on, because I would fly to Pennsylvania, and every time I would get on the plane, Dad would always get me Chips Ahoy cookies. Like, I love Chips Ahoy cookies. And I remember going into the Winn-Dixie, and your brother was there one day, and he said something to me, and I said, oh, yeah. I said, tell Megan. I said, hi. And he was like, oh. I said, yeah, I'm going away for the summer. I'll be back before school starts. And he goes, all right. He goes, have a safe trip. I'm like, you know, you too. And it was just a passing conversation. And then a couple weeks later for my dad to call me, because I didn't know Brandon was missing. I didn't know how Brandon died. Dad called Mom's house, and we were at Kmart. And I remember this so vividly because my mother was being the O.J. Simpson murder trial when she was at work. And we went to Kmart, and then I came home, and she played the answer machine. It was my dad. And he said, hey, Jerry, this is Henry. Tell Jessica to call me when she gets home. So I'm thinking, oh, shit, he didn't found something in my room. I ain't had no business having. That's another story. I called Dad, and I said, you know, what's up? And he was like, where's your mama? She's in the kitchen. He said, tell her to come stand next to you. I'm thinking, okay, I'm in trouble. So I said, Mom, come here. And so she comes. I said, she's standing next to me. He says, I don't know how to tell you, but your friend's brother was murdered. And the first thing that popped in my head was Melanie, who lived across the street from me. I thought it was her brother. And I said, Chris? Yeah. And he said no, and he always called Brandon out called him the wrong name. My dad's good for that. He said Brian. I said, I don't know a Brian. He said, the boy that worked at Winn-Dixie. I said, Brandon? And he said, yeah, somebody killed him. And it didn't make sense to me, because I'm like, so what do you mean somebody killed him? And he wouldn't tell me what happened. I didn't know how Brandon was murdered until school started, and then everyone was coming up with these stupid stories about what happened. And I'm like, whoa. And then I felt so bad about it.
Yeah. Oh, people would come up to me and say, you know, your dad was involved in this. Do you know your dad did
God.
This? Do you know somebody did this? And I'm like, and Dad's like, you know. And I'd go home and I'd be like, Dad, I'd call my dad like upset and be like, Dad, people are blaming you. And this, and he's like, Megan, you just gotta just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Dad's always been the raging, like, you know, you gotta take Mom for what she will go out, and when she goes, she's emotional driven. So whatever comes out Mom's mouth, it's coming. And I get that honest. And Dad's the calm, like more, you know, passive. But he is aggressive. So I've got that happy medium, thank God, somewhere. I don't know how it worked out, but I got the best of both worlds from both of them. Thank goodness. But I am definitely still like a you know, rabid animal when I have to be.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, so I've never believed. And when people say that kind of stuff, it was just like, are you – like, how can you even talk to me
like that? It was disgusting. I never shared this with you, and it came to me this past summer. And I can't remember the girl's name, but I remember sitting at White Knoll Middle School, and this piece of trash heifer literally was sitting there, and she said, I know who killed your friend's brother, but I can't tell.
Oh, of course.
And
they say stuff like that, or say he deserved to die. They say stuff like that. I heard
what?
That. I'm like, are you kidding me?
I just sat
like,
there. Yeah, how do you come back from that? Like, you're literally – I mean, I know we're at that time in middle school, we're kids and everything, but you're literally sitting here saying that you know something, and why are you telling me? And I even think I told her, go tell Megan. But it was so bad because I couldn't go over to your house. I couldn't call you. My dad didn't want me going over to your house because he thought the killer was watching the house. Then he didn't want me calling because he said the cops had a trap on the phone. And I said, well, what do you want me to do? He goes, if you're going to talk to her, you need to talk to her at school. And for 6 months, I wasn't even allowed to leave the cul-de-sac. I had to basically call my dad everywhere I went. And before then, and I mean, you can remember, we never – when we would go hang out, we never checked in. Like, it was we our parents knew where the fuck we were. We didn't have to check in. We felt so safe during that time. And it's so fucked up. It's so crazy. And it's literally things that I just start recalling, like, oh my God, that's why I never went back over Megan's house. Like, I never went back over there because my dad told me if he caught me going back over there, I was going to be in a hell of a lot of trouble, and I wasn't trying to test it. So we never, kind of like all of us.
Yeah.
We never hung out like that. We all went our separate ways.
It kind of happened that way. And it was like, because before we were like, we're at the YMCA, we're hanging out, we're over there, you know, the land, we're going around on at dark is when we can come home. You know, when the lights on, it's time to come home. And that was such a different change. And I didn't even stay home for several months. I stayed at my aunt's house, actually. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I wanted to be away. And I didn't want to be out. I was scared. And that's something as a 12-year-old child does completely, you know, explain it. I don't even know how I – because at that point, whenever you lose someone like that, because you're close, like, Brandon was my best, I mean, closest thing
yeah,
I had.
Yeah, y'all were
mom and dad,
together.
Yeah, mom and dad got divorced in 94, and mom was always a stay-at-home mom, and then, you know, we got dad, and, you know, when things changed like that, it was like, you know, it was us, and we were, you know, very close, and we looked out for each other, and we were just always, he was my biggest fan, I was his, and he's always keeping in mind, always like, you know, you mess with my brother, I'll get you, you know, and so I was always the feisty stuff, and we grew up playing, that's why I started playing softball at four. Like, we grew up, and it was such a perfect life that we supposedly, and it just, like, faded. And then, even the other day, I mean, it's the saddest thing that I still have to, like, anytime I go anywhere, everyone's like, oh my God, you look familiar. And then if I say who I, you know, I'm like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my God. And then the other day, as I was introduced the other night when I was out as, this is the girl whose brother was stabbed over 100 times.
Oh my
and I just looked
gosh.
At them, and this is a person who knew me, and I'm just like, why would you introduce me that way? But they were outside talking about it, because it's a topic. It's still a topic. It's a huge topic, and you know, but that's not what I don't want to be known like that, and I don't want anyone to say things that's hurtful stuff. No one wants to hear that in public.
No.
And I know people don't mean to, but even people have even said now, well, if they did it 25 years ago, don't you think that they have changed their ways even now?
No.
You know. No.
Murder is murder. This is murder. This isn't somebody that you know, stole something from y'all's house that you could get back. No, they took your brother's life.
Yeah. And so to say that, it's kind of like, you know, and it's not said directly to me. I've said, you know, I've heard things, but then when things are directly said to me, it's just kind of like, you know, and I find out it'd be like, you know, you should really fuck off, you know, and I really want to say, I also want to be professional about the things that I do and the way I, because as my brother, as what I do in life, and I have children and stuff like that, and God forbid anyone ever, you know, because my kids, you know, they're the same age. They remind me so much of my brother and I. And so it is one of those things. And I am a, you know, I look at things so much differently now about, you know, because, you know, things can happen so quickly. But people are so just, some people have been so awesome, but there's some people that are still just so not, you know, they're unsensitive about the compassion and care about this happening.
It's
like, oh, what happened 25? What's it matter? It matters a lot.
No.
It
matters so much because it's so weird. And the reason I say it matters so much is because Brandon's death, and again, since we're hitting the 25-year mark, Brandon's death completely shaped all of the rest of our childhoods. If you knew him and you grew up around him, it just everything from that moment completely changed. I can at least say it changed for me because for a while, I did not feel safe. And at the same time, there was so many unknowns. This is before social media. This is before cell phones. This is before internet was readily available everywhere you go. We had nothing. It was literally like if I were to, you know, on a typical Saturday, get up, get dressed, eat cereal. Dad will be working in the yard. I'm like, okay, I'm going across the street to Melanie's house. And then from Melanie's house, we would probably end up over at your house. Then we would go back over to YMCA, or we'd be walking on Old Orangeburg. Nowadays, I would never condone a child being able to do that. But back during that time, we felt so safe, and we never, ever, ever thought that somebody would kill one of us. And
no,
we never ever, it's not a thought at all. And then, you know, you don't know as a kid how to process it. So you don't, we just went on with it and hurt and scared. And then as we got older, like I said, we all just went in different directions. We just never really, that cohesiveness wasn't there anymore. And that,
yeah,
it
shapes you so different.
Awful.
And it's not only, they didn't take only Brandon. They took a piece of myself. They took my parents. My mother changed completely. My father changed completely. So for that moment that happened, it wasn't just a loss on my brother. I lost everyone. Like, they took away the most important people in my life. I don't hate anyone. Like, I don't have hate in my heart for these people. I don't. I know that sounds really weird, but I don't hate my heart. I don't think at any time I've ever felt hate. I felt, you know, I'm sad at times. Like, you know, when there's something that goes on, or, you know, my son's just like, he does everything just like my brother does. Like the hunt, the fishing, the baseball, you know, and just the way the action stuff. And you know, there's certain things that my daughter's doing. And there's things that, you know, my kids, I wish he would have been, you know, what would have been different, like, had my brother still been here to be, you know, being around the lake now, you know, what I'm saying, like, this was his life, like, that's why I'm at peace with certain things, but it took everything away, not just from, you know, him. They didn't just take Brandon's life, they took an entire family's life, and
they
entire
did.
Communities, and so, like, now I say, you know, I want, like, I'm not trying, like, to, I just want to know, like, my thing is like, give us some kind of closure, peace, or something that says, hey, you know, this is what happened. Da, 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 da. I mean, you've lived your life 25 years more. You know, it's not that we're out for blood. We're not trying to hurt anyone. We're just trying to figure out why someone do such a thing. You know, my grandparents are getting very old. You know, they've lived a nightmare for years. I mean, because my grandparents, my brother and I, like, both sides, like, that we would stay, my wasn't around here. And when my parents, you know, split, of course, my brother and I were at my grandparents' house all the time. So there's so much things that there was such, so whatever happened, these people that were involved in my brother's murder knew my brother. They knew my family.
Absolutely.
They may not have known Brandon necessarily, but they knew my parents or my family or my stepmom or whoever was involved. They knew my family. So they knew exactly what we're up against. And that surrounds everyone is so common. I mean, like, so looking into everything that we've looked at and research and stuff like that, and I was so involved in it. It was almost, you know, and Brian Feature as well. I mean, it was almost, it consumed our lives. It changed Brian, poor Brian. I mean, he has really, like, dug into this so very hard. And he's got pushback from it. They made him look, there's certain things that just were awful. And, you know, he didn't deserve that. He will never just. He's
no.
a great human being. He was doing it for us because no one else would listen, and he would. And that's where all this stuff comes from. You know, my piece in the heart page, unfinished files, who have helped multiple people at this point. Not saying that Brandon hasn't been helped and stuff like that, but we just haven't found that. We haven't found justice in the closure. We're working on there's another case that they're working for today, which I would love to have been there today to help walk as a kidnapping back before Brandon and a child. So it's something that, you know, but it's opened eyes and it's reached a lot of people. And, you know, there's no, my family doesn't hate anyone. It's so hard to understand, like, what happened? Like, what would make you do this? What
occurred to make
it that's what's things. Never made that's never ever made sense to me. It's never nothing ever makes sense about this case. It's it's so weird because my dad, when all this was going down, he was like, you know, was Brandon involved in anything? And Brandon was a straight kid. I mean, this doesn't happen. It does not happen. It never should have happened the way that it happened. It's just somebody knew something. And again, I agree with you. It was premeditated. It was pure unadulterated rage. And
yeah, and
I
was huge.
It bothers me still.
Well, Winn-Dixie was huge for, you know, they would run a ring. They had a meat stuff ring there. They had, you know, sex acts going on there with younger
what?
Girls. I mean, you'd have people. Oh, Winn-Dixie was known for being a very yes. That was a sex trafficking. A huge
back in
drug
95.
Ring. Yes, and that was unknown. And even parts of law enforcement were involved in that. So yeah,
wow.
Winn-Dixie was definitely a place that was not. And I worked there after.
And my dad taught
my
me how to drive in that fucking parking lot. That Winn-Dixie parking lot is when I had my first freaking driving lesson, like 2 years after Brandon was killed. Wow.
Well, I worked there after, and I saw. You know, I worked with people. There was a whole different atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know, just the things were there. I didn't know much. I just worked. You know, on the weekends and stuff. And that was crazy. Everyone was like, "Oh my, you're really going to work at Winn-Dixie? That's your first job?" Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I took it. I was a bad girl, and then I was a cashier, and I worked there for a while. And, you know, I was never scared. I was never worried. I did know, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, people there that were in management and stuff like that were, you know, their morals were pretty messed up, which I'm sure, you know, anywhere people have something going on. But back then, Winn-Dixie was very one of those places. And that stuff you find out later on. You know, there's stuff sold at flea markets. And pillion and stuff like that, and things that they get from Winn-Dixie, for like stuff was stolen, everything like that. So, you know, it's like, do you think would Brandon see something that they weren't supposed to see?
Exactly.
Was he involved with people he didn't know? So those are all kinds of things, and that's why it's like someone out there knows. I mean, these shady people who have like been in our lives and like, you know, actually cried with my family and sat with us and, you know, helped support things and stuff like that. I can't see how anyone could live with themselves.
Absolutely.
Knowing what, and we may never get the closure and stuff for what people do, but you know, and I believe in God highly, and I know that eventually, some way somehow we're going to get some answers, and you know, don't know when, and I don't know how, but people are going to pay for what they. I mean,
absolutely.
And that's not something that. I don't wish that against. That's between them and God. That's not something that we want anyone. So that's where we look at things. But to know, like, you know, what would we be doing now? My brother would be 40 years old, you know, and
he'd be 41.
Yeah, 40. He's born in 1979. He was 41.
Yeah.
September 13th. He was yes, September 13th. See how crazy I am?
Yeah, he's only Virgo I ever liked in my life because I hate Virgos.
Yeah,
I don't like them.
I'm 38, so I'm still thinking I'm, you know, 30. So, you know, we're kind of back
yeah.
here.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be 39 in 2 months. So, I'm up there with you. So, yeah.
So, would I have kids? Would I have nieces and nephews? Would I have, you know what I'm saying? Even though I have, you know, two little brothers at my and stuff like that. There, and I have a stepsister and whatnot. And there's just things, though. And, you know, it's not that I don't have him. And
exactly.
You know, those are the hard. My children's births were hard. But when my children do great things, it's hard. All those things that I wish he was there to see and stuff like that. Those are hard. And Christmas is hard. And any holiday, it doesn't matter. You know, my dad's, you know, suffering from Parkinson's. And so him like that. You know, would it be different? Would Brandon be here to help? Like, I'm the only, like, it's things I want to turn to him. Like, that's the only person I really want to turn to. So I'm like a distance kind of person that comes from that. It's my background, but also I'm not, it's made me who I am, which made me what I do in life. I decided to be a nurse too, because I couldn't save him. Yeah. And so every day in my life, I can actually save someone else. And I know that sounds kind of crazy because we were at a meeting one time and this was when I was the director of nursing with Agape, and we were talking, and we went over some stuff, and they were like, why'd you become a nurse? And this, like, everybody's in the room crying, and I'm just standing there straight-faced and just like, but it's like, that's my story, and that's his story. And you know, I never want anyone to feel sorry for me or my family or anything like that. We have a life, and but even though he's not yet, they did take a huge part in everything, but it's just,
yeah,
you know,
it's hard.
We don't want any of that shit. That's just not, that's not how my family works. We push on, you know, we come close, and we are 100% all together. My mom and my dad, before, you know, of course it was difficult, the, you know, the divorce and stuff like that. So you got,
I remember
you
your
got
parents
two,
got divorced. Yeah.
How easy is that to play against the family whenever you've got people who aren't on the same page? Well, now guess what? They're all on the same page. And it's a point now where the ones together, and I don't blame my mom or dad. I don't blame anyone. And I couldn't do much at that time. I'm 12. So, you know, all I could do was just kind of just live. And I lost, you know, at that point in my life, I think that whatever, whoever did this and however they thought this out or whatever, they took a whole childhood. We were no longer children anymore. Our innocence was gone. I didn't know anything about people doing things like that. And then just like, I didn't ever know, like, exactly what happened. And I remember going, there was actually our table in the kitchen. Dad had the autopsy report sitting there, and I picked it up.
Oh my gosh.
I looked at it and I put it back and I didn't say anything. And I'd read it. So my family, like, I never really wanted to be like, I don't know. I don't want anyone to think that that's what we're looking for, like to harm people or to be pitied or anything like that. We just want to know what happened to my brother and why.
Yeah.
Why?
We all want to know it. And Brandon's death, and I hate saying this, and this is, gosh, this is crazy. Brandon's death was the first out of a couple. Megan, we've lost some people. We've lost some childhood friends. We've lost a lot.
And this was probably one of the first cases in Lexington County.
Exactly.
I can actually say. And it was handled, the way it was handled was absolutely not the way you should ever handle anything. It was it was completely against anything that any police officer or anyone would ever stand for morally. And I don't believe that everyone's bad at Lexington County. I don't believe that. I don't want anyone to think that our family, you know, not, we don't support law enforcement. We do highly, but I don't support people who are doing a job. You know, it's not just a job. It's a passion, it's a thing. If you're not going to go for every pickup, they didn't pick up evidence. They didn't follow leads. There is a lead that they didn't follow that was huge. And I don't know the number to it, but my mom does. But it was all kinds of leads, and people were calling in and saying, you know, I saw him here, and they would tell, people would tell the story, like, and it would line up, but, and it's just like, and they don't follow through with it. It was just like, okay, we got this one guy.
That's insanity.
He did it. It's done. And I'm sitting there thinking, are y'all serious right now? And even at my young age, I'm sitting there thinking, are we serious? Because I remember pulling up on the bus, and that's when Daddy told us that they had convicted this guy in Arizona. And I'm like, no,
gosh.
Arizona. Still now, I don't know how he feels. I would love to meet him one day. I've even discussed that. I would love to talk to him. I'd sit down with him. I'd have a conversation. Mm-hmm. I want to know what he went through and why, because I don't believe that
exactly.
He did it. And I don't either. That. And
I did back when all this was coming. Like, yes, they finally got somebody. But then there was a part of me that was like, none of this makes any sense. Like, this is, I've always felt it was an adult. It may have been a teenager, but I think it was an adult that was involved. I don't believe, I would say this, I don't believe that Brandon was scared of his murderers because he knew his murderers or he was acquainted with his murderers. I don't think he was scared until they were killing him. I don't think that it was at that Winn-Dixie, no one saw anything. If somebody saw something and knows
you can't
something.
Be there. Oh yeah, there's
exactly.
Several of them. There's several of them that I've seen, I've talked to, I've been around, I've looked them in their face, and they've walked right past me in like places, and I'm just looking like, you know what, you're a coward, and be a coward, that's fine, but you live with it. You have to go to bed at night with your cases of beer and your Valium and whatever gets you through your day and whatever you have to take to put you where your thoughts are, whether it's, sitting around listening to whatever or threatening people or being just so sick in the head that people are dying, you're sick, you're sitting there,
mm-hmm.
Because people have to self-medicate. I mean, and they do. So if you're sitting and then you hear, you see these people and they look like they have been, had a really rough life. Well, I assume you did.
Look what you have been holding. Look what you've been holding for all these years. Brandon has always been in the back of my mind because, again, everything before Brandon's death, everything seemed to be so in line and so perfect. And like you said, we were all so innocent. And then I find out later, this summer, I was talking to my old Land O'Lakes friends. We had a pedophile that lived in our neighborhood. We had a fucking pedophile that lived in the neighborhood, and we all were friendly with him. And I sat in his car while he would wash it sometimes, me and another friend of mine, listening to Beastie Boys and Cypress Hill, thinking he was the coolest thing. And now he's a registered sex offender. He actually did time for indecent exposure to children. So it was everything that was going on at that time. We weren't aware of what could happen. I never thought that anyone would kill one of us. I never thought that. You hear it on Lifetime movies, but you don't think about it. So kind of to wrap everything up, Megan, let people know if they have any information how they can find you and your page and your mom. I know you guys are tirelessly always on Facebook. So can you give that information?
Yeah, we actually have anyone can reach out to Unfinished Files. Everything is confidential. Brian Cetri and Eagle Cold Case Investigations do that. Brian Cetri, Tyler Ryan, Lexington County Sheriff's Department. They can Facebook Peace in the Heart. That is my page. We have Justice for Brandon. We actually had to make that private because there are so many people coming on and there's so much information getting brought into that and questioned. And I think, I don't know, is anyone going to be able to ask questions today or is there anything that...
They can. Yeah, we're just running out of time on the show, but I want to have you come back on later on. But anybody, please listen to the show. If you have any information about Brandon Vincent's murder case, please go on Facebook, look for Justice for Brandon and Peace in the Heart. Thank you, Megan, so much. I always love you. Loved you since I was 11 years old. I miss you.
It's been a long time.
I know it has. I got to drive down there. But thank you for joining me today. And you guys, I'll be on 2 weeks from now with another guest. But thank you, Megan.
You're so welcome. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.